Something from yesterday's class. Who remembers something? What struck you from yesterday's class, if you remember something? Yes.
Bohini appeared first, Lakshmi Devi appeared.
Yes.
And everyone was completely frustrated amongst the demons because everyone wanted, but they were frustrated since she picked up the Supreme Personality of Godhead because she could find in everyone some fault. And also we heard about
You only get one.
Oh.
You finished your one.
No, this one is
this is a too long one. You only get little one.
Lakshmiji found faults in the most qualified persons of this universe.
Yes.
And even in Lord Vishnu there was one fault.
Yes.
That was a good fault.
Yeah, as a glorification actually. His neutrality, that he was detached, didn't require anything from anyone. If the Supreme Lord isn't equal to everyone, how about in the beginning of last chapter, the last canto, the first chapter is called "The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone." What? Which one? Is he equal or unequal, or equally unequal, or unequally equal? But whatever he does is good for everyone. So in his chastising or snatching things away from the demons, that is also good for them. Because then the demons realize that they are not supreme, that Krishna is superior. Anyone else remember something? Anyone else remember anything? No one else remembers anything? No, but you already remembered something. I want to see if anyone else remembers something. People who come late cannot remember anything. Because you don't know what everyone else said. Okay, in this class, at the end of this class, certainly Krishna is going to award some very special inspiration and knowledge to you. This class is entitled "The Battle Between the Dem," or the chapter 10 is entitled "The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons." So certainly, Krishna is going to give you some great inspiration from this. And at the end of the class, I'm going to ask you what that inspiration was. So please listen carefully. Find out about the demons and demigods being both within the same person? Yes?
Is it?
Okay. Then why don't you find it and tell us? No, in the break. Okay? Because otherwise you'll be distracted and we wouldn't want that to happen. So the last chapter, Mohini Murti was so, just after cutting off Rahu's head, and having distributed all the nectar to the demigods, Mohini Murti revealed her actual form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's interesting in that 27th verse of the last chapter, it's Pita Praya, almost finished being drunk. Everything was gone. Amriti Deva, by the demigods. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Loka Bhavana, who is the maintainer and well-wisher of the three worlds. So he is the maintainer and well-wisher of the three worlds. So, and yet, as we were saying, he favored the devas. So this is required for actually the maintenance and the benefit for the three worlds, because the demonic forces, when they have power, when they gain strength, they do not benefit the three worlds. What to speak of maintaining it? They exploit it, and practically speaking ruin the existence, because their concept is averse to the concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their concept is their own idea how pleasure will be generated from the material world. And it's yehi samsparsaja bhoga. It's by combining the senses and the sense objects, basically. And that doesn't bring pleasure. Contrarily, it brings suffering. So Krishna, in his favoring the worlds, he disallows the, as we've heard, the demonic forces to gain power. So one can ask the question, well, if he doesn't like the demonic forces to gain power, then what's going on now? Because the world is full of people who are going in the opposite direction to his desire. And there are quite a few answers to this, but one is that he does come, and he comes as the Hare Krishna Mahamantra to spread the ability to purify. And as we hear with when Nityananda was pleading on behalf of Jagai and Madhai, Nityananda Prabhu said that if you've come to deliver the most fallen, and if you kill the most fallen, there's not going to be anyone left, practically speaking. Like Kalki, at the end of Kali Yuga, Kalki ushers in Satyuga again by removing everyone who is demonic. And that's more or less the entire population, and he starts all over again. So it's like that. But the hope is that we take shelter of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when the demons and the devotees are in the same body, if both of them are chanting Hare Krishna, then everything will be okay. It will be a good kirtan. The demons can play the gong. So Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, so, and also the conclusion of the last chapter in two verses was that the demons and devotees, they worked equally as hard, but the asuras did not get the result from their work. They didn't get their desire, while the demigods did. And if one engages one's activities in devotional service by serving Krishna, then the results are beneficial for the entire world and, of course, to the individual. So Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, so the pastime appears to be over. The demigods drank the nectar, the demons were frustrated, Mohini Murti revealed herself to everyone as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the demons and daityas all engaged with full attention and effort in churning the ocean. But because they were not devotees of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. So that's what we just heard. O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead had brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the demigods who are his dear devotees, he left the presence of them all and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. Thus, they began to march towards the demigods with raised weapons. So out of enmity towards their enemies, they began to wage war. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods, who were always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayan, use their various weapons to counteract the demons in a fighting spirit. So they were previously losing and now they were victorious. O king, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk ensued between the demigods and demons. So this occurred right on the spot, just where the churning of the ocean took place. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair on one's body stand on end. Both parties in that fight, so this is what was happening, were extremely angry at heart. Why were they angry? Because there was such enmity for such a long time. And in enmity, they beat one another with swords, arrows, and varieties of other weapons. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. There are always two kinds of men in this universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets like the sun and the moon also have enemies like Rahu. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. So, interesting. So the demons can also take to Krishna consciousness. The sounds of the conch shell, so going back to the battle that will make one's hair stand on edge. The sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, bedis, and domaris, kettle drums. These were, and during war times, people used to play these to intimidate the other side, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers who were both on chariots and on foot were tumultuous. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers. The infantry soldiers were the opposing infantry. What's an infantry soldier?
Foot soldier,
yes. They're walking on their feet, not on horseback or anything. The soldiers on horseback fought with the opposing soldiers on horseback, and the soldiers on the backs of elephants were the enemy soldiers on elephants. And this way, the fighting took place between equals. This was the Vedic system. Some soldiers fought on the backs of camels, some on the backs of elephants, some on asses, some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys, some on tigers, and some on lions. And this way, they all engaged in fighting. O king, some soldiers fought on the backs of vultures, eagles, ducks, hawks, and basha birds. Some fought on the back of timangilas, which can devour huge whales. Some on the backs of sarabs. Sarab is what? An antelope, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure. But could you take a look and see what a sarab is?
It's an eight-footed animal.
And some fought on buffaloes, rhinoceroses, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. I'm not sure what an aruna is. It's probably reddish in color. Others fought on the back of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mounted on animals of the water, land, and sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. Quite astounding and unlike what we see nowadays. O king, O descendant of Maharaj Pandu, the soldiers of both the demigods and demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags, and umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful. And in the light of the glittering sunshine, their shields, ornaments, and sharp, clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus the ranks of soldiers seem like two oceans with bands of aquatics. From that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Bali Maharaj, so here is our introduction to Bali Maharaj, the son of Varochan. And who was Varochan?
Of Prahlad.
Was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayas. O king, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all kinds of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of chamaras, Bali Maharaj, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Surrounding Bali Maharaj on all sides were the commanders and captains of the demons sitting on their respective chariots. Among them were the following demons: Namuchi, Shambara, Bana, Viprachiti, Ayomuka, Dvimurdha, Kalanabha, Praheti, Heti, Ilval, Sakuni, Bhutasantapa, Brajadamstra, Virochan, Hayagriva, Samkushira, Kapila, Megadundubi, Taraka, Chakradrik, Shumba, Nishumba, Jamba, Utkal, Arista, Aristanemi, Tripuradip, Maya, the sons of Paloma, the Kaleyas, and Nivatakavachas. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar and had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods, and to encourage their armies, they made a tumultuous sound like the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells. Balabit, Lord Indra, upon seeing the situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Sitting on Airavat, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udaigiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Surrounding Lord Indra, king of heaven, were the demigods seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O king, Bali Maharaj fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Heti, Mitra with Praheti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanab, Vishakarma with Maya Danava, Tvasta with Shambara, and the sun god with Varochan. The demigod Aparjita fought with Namuchi, and the two Aswini Kumar brothers fought with Vrishaparva. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling air fought with Paloma, and Shumba and Nushumba fought the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who is called Bhadrakali. So what a wild fight was going on. These incredibly powerful personalities were trying to kill each other in great anger. O Maharaj Prakrit, suppressor of enemies, Arindam, Lord Shiva fought with Jamba, Vibhavasu fought with Maheshwara, Ilval, along with his brother Vitapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma, Dharmarsha fought with Cupid, the demon Utkal with the Matrika demigoddesses, Brihaspati with Sukracharya, and Sanaischar, Saturn, with Narakasura. The Maruts fought with Nivitakavacha, the Vasus fought with the Kalakeya demons, the Vishadeva demigods fought with Paloma demons, and the Rudras fought with the Krodevas demons, who were victims of anger. All of these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. All of them desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like basundis, chakras, clubs, wristis, pratasas, shaktis, omukas, prasas, parasvadas, nistrimasas, lances, parigas, mudgaras, and bindipals. If you ever go to Jaipur, and maybe in Udaipur too, there's the palace museums there, and they have all the, this maybe of 500 years ago, they have the different types of weapons. There's a huge cannon, but they have all kinds of other weapons, and maybe some of them have this kind of names, but the one that I saw that stuck in my mind, they had like that weapons that pierce your body and that are like scissors. So once they're in, they so all these really horrendous, terrible weapons, all meant for killing each other. And had weapons that shaped like this for cutting off heads and things like that, and just like things were are described here. The elephants, horses, and they had they had some clothes from one of the kings of Jaipur. I don't remember how long ago, but it was huge. It was huge, and the gentleman was over 7 foot tall. And it told how much he ate every day, and it was huge amounts. It was huge. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. Their arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and demigods and the wheels of the chariot, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. So there was incredible bloodshed. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over the space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky and came to the earth as a mixture of blood and dust. In the course of the battle, the war field became strewn with the severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring and their teeth still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from these severed heads. Similarly, many arms decorated with ornaments and clutching various weapons were strewn here and there, as were many legs and thighs which resembled the trunks of elephants. Many headless trunks were generated on that battlefield. With weapons in their arms, these ghostly trunks, which could see with the eyes and the fallen heads, attacked the enemy soldiers. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Aravata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Aravata's legs. And with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. Before Bali Maharaja's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who was expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type, known as Bala, which were extremely sharp. When Bali Maharaja saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon, known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand, but Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasha, tomara, wristis, and other weapons, but whatever weapon he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons. What does carnivorous mean? Completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierce them. Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder, that began to shower live coals, hot coals. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartaka fire, which appeared at the time of dissolution. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea foam, agitated by fiery blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. So when Dhruva Maharaj went to in the Himalayas and to the city of the Yakshas, they also use these type of mystical weapons upon him, and he stopped them through the holy names, and there are some wonderful purports there by Srila Prabhupada. So when this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who are expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. So Krishna to the rescue again. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resembled the petals of a newly blossomed lotus. So what a contrast in the description of the ghastly descriptions that were just described, and now hearing about the beauty of the Lord. His eyes resembled petals of a newly blossomed lotus sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders. Dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kastuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings, the Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. As the dangers of the dream cease, when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. O king, when the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead carried by Garuda was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon, he killed the demon Kalanemi along with his carrier, the lion. Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord with a sharp club. The demon, who was roaring like a, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that enemy also. Sukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods headed by Indra and Vayu were brought back to life. Being enlivened, the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. Okay, what lessons from this? Practically speaking, no purports, but what lessons are there? That's the essential message. And that's really the, one adds a little more to that, and the best way of remembering Hari is by chanting. And then really that's the purpose of the Bhagavatam in one sense, to bring us the point to always chant Krishna's names and to be free from all the difficulties of the material world and go back home to Goloka Vrindavan. Because it was a horrible scene. I mean, it was a horrible scene. So much blood and arms and heads. So many determined soldiers getting killed and their blood flowing everywhere. And one killing another one, and then that one who just killed someone losing his head or losing his arms and using mystical difficulties to harass the enemies, and lions and tigers and snakes and mountains and burning, hot burning coals being poured. Torture, pain, suffering. And it all vanishes when the Lord appears, when Krishna appears. So practically speaking, the great question of our life is how to get the Lord to appear, because certainly we're stuck in an illusion. So here is the answer. We remember him, we chant his name, and we organize our life in such a way that it is full of remembering him and chanting his name. And if we don't remember him and chant his name, look what the alternative is. Just think of what the battle is like. That's the material world, practically speaking. It's horrible. It's a devastation. It's terrifying. It's dangerous. It's frustrating. Okay, what are the lessons? And what's yes, very good. And what's the hate, the dvesha, the enmity? What's the cause of that in this pastime? But one step after. Huh? Yeah. So the icha and the dvesha. You take the icha and you end up with the dvesha too. You can't just have icha. The enmity comes because of... Why were the demons angry? Because they were frustrated. Because the demigods had frustrated their desire. And also, just note how... Say if we take this story as a continuation, which it is. It's the fight again is taking place on the shore of the ocean of milk. Where the Mandara Mountain was carried. Was it Mandara Mountain? Yeah. Golden Mountain. Mandara Mountain was carried there. Who carried it there? It was the Lord. Who got on top of it? The mountain? Lord Ajita with his 1,000 arms. And who was below it? Lord Korma was below it. And who empowered the demigods, the demons, and Vasuki? That was the Lord again, through the modes of material nature. And who brought the nectar? Dharmachari, who is the Lord. He's doing everything. And then the demons grabbed it and they began fighting. And why did they start fight?
They wanted it for themselves.
No. Yes, they wanted it for themselves, but why did they start fighting?
Each one of them wanted the whole thing.
Yes, true, but why did they start fighting? Yes, he actually did it. He made them start fighting with each other. That's described in the verse. He said, don't worry, because the demigods were very frustrated in what's going to happen. And he said, don't worry, I'll make them fight amongst themselves. And that, again, just in a generic sense. You see this in the world so much. There's a government or something like that. And then there's the opponents of the government. So they unite. The revolutionary forces unite to get in power, and then soon as they overthrow they unite to overthrow the government, and then soon as they overthrow the government, they start fighting and killing each other. Trotsky, he got it, yes. They all, that's what they do. And then the biggest demons, you know, the weaker demons say, we should be fair now, because we all fought in this battle. And the big demons say, right, okay, yes. You just wait over there. We'll be fair in a few minutes. First we're going to drink the nectar and get all the power and all the money, and then we'll finish you off very quickly. Just wait one moment. I'm doing something right now, and then I'll be with you in a moment. And then they start fighting, and the demons were so angry, they started fighting again, and the demigods had just drunk nectar, but it wasn't real amrita, because it's in the material world. But it made them powerful, it made them strong, and still they were getting smashed due to the intensive anger on the other side. And then Krishna came again. Why? And this is what makes one a demigod. And this is the saving grace of the demigods, is that although they are Sakam devotees, they have desires, but yet they are devotees. And what makes them different then? They have desires and the demons have desires. And why does the Lord consistently favor them is because they always take shelter of him and they try to cooperate with him. Always. They always take shelter of him when they're in difficulty. And the difficulties always come and they always take shelter of him. So the difficulties, bad or good, ultimately they're causing them to take shelter of Krishna. So one will have to say that the material world is ultimately good for the devotees, because it's going to give them difficulties and it's going to differentiate them from the demons, because they're going to always take shelter of the Lord. And this is what we have to learn. And the demons, if we're paying attention, notice that they never take shelter of the Lord. They just keep on going by their own strength. They never take shelter of Krishna. When they're defeated or when they're in victorious, they don't take shelter. So even the demigods, according to the first text in this 11th chapter, they were killed and they're brought back to life. And then they became enlivened again and they continued the battle and they beat the very same demons who had defeated them before. And remember, this was just after they took the Amrita, they were killed. When the most powerful Indra became angry and took his thunderbolt in hand to kill Maharaj Bali, the demons began lamenting. Alas, alas, they knew what was going to happen. Sober and tolerant and well equipped with paraphernalia for fighting, Bali Maharaj moved before Indra on the great battlefield. King Indra, who always carries the thunderbolt in his hand, rebuked Bali Maharaj as follows. Indra said, "O rascal, Natavan muda mayabir, as a cheetah sometimes binds the eyes of a child and takes away his possessions, you are trying to defeat us by displaying some mystic powers, although you know that we are the masters of such mystic powers." And indeed, that's what he was upset with. It was the demons seemed to use that as their last resort always. And remember how early it is described how the fighting took place amongst equals. The horsemen fought the other horsemen. The ones on the elephants fought the ones on elephants. So this was breaking the rules of Kshatriya combat, because and it was in that sense irreligious. So those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world of liberation, are caused to be sent to the lowest regions of the universe. Today, with my thunderbolt, which has hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same powerful person, shall sever your head from your body. Although you can produce so much jugglery through illusion, you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now try to exist on this battlefield with your relatives and friends. So what are we going to learn here? Bali Maharaj replied, all those present on this battlefield are certainly under the influence of time, eternal time. And according to their prescribed activities, they're destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, and death one after another. So Bali Maharaj is replying quite philosophically. Here's Prabhupada's purport. If one is victorious on the battlefield, he becomes famous. And if one is not victorious but is defeated, he may die. Both victory and defeat are possible, whether on such a battlefield as this or on the battlefield of the struggle for existence. Everything takes place according to the laws of nature. Prakriti kriyamanani, gunai kamani sarvasa. Since everyone without exception is subject to the modes of material nature, whether one is victorious or defeated, he is not independent, but is under the control of material nature. Bali Maharaj therefore was very sensible. He knew that the fighting was arranged by eternal time, and that under time's influence one must accept the results of one's own activities. Therefore, even though Indra threatened that he would now kill Bali Maharaj by releasing the thunderbolt, Bali Maharaj was not at all afraid. This is the spirit of a kshatriya, yudhe chapyapalayanam. A kshatriya must be tolerant in all circumstances, especially on the battlefield. Thus Bali Maharaj asserted that he was not at all afraid of death, although he was threatened by such a great personality as the King of Heaven. Bali Maharaj said, seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant, aware of the real truth, neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. Because at the height of one's success, the next thing that's going to happen is one crashes. It just must happen in one way or another. So why become jubilant in success, and why become miserable in failure? Because it's always changing. Everything's changing. Time is pushing everything. Bali Maharaj is saying this to Indra. So this isn't this isn't usually what's talked of on the battlefield. So he's criticizing Indra for his mood. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. And later, we'll read the purport to 8. And later on, Indra is going to, Sukadev explains that because Bali Maharaj was speaking the truth, Indra actually accepts it and he doesn't become angry. So here's the purport 8. Bali Maharaj knew that Indra, King of Heaven, was extremely powerful, certainly more powerful than he himself. Nonetheless, Bali Maharaj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita 2:11, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, Asochananvasochastham pragyavaram stravashase gatasun nagatasun cha nanusochanti panditaha. While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying that he was not a pandit or learned person, Bali Maharaj also challenged King Indra and his associates. Because they were ahankara vamudatma kartaham, that we're the ones doing it, we're causing the success. And if one causes one's own success in one's mind, one will cause one's own failure in one's mind. Actually, it is karma, it is time, it is ultimately the Supreme Lord. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there is no question of being sorry or being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. They're always changing. After all, since we are being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? One who is fully conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of nature's activities. Never exhilarated and never, what's the opposite of exhilarated? Yeah, or the opposite, low, feeling low because of it. And this is what the modes of passion and ignorance do. It makes all these, the jubilation and the misery, the manic depression that so much afflicts the contemporary citizens of Kali Yuga. In Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Krishna advises that one be tolerant. Tams tatikshas vibharata. Following this advice of Krishna's, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is the symptom of a devotee. A devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances Krishna protects his devotee. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his duty, from his prescribed duty of devotional service. The material qualities of jubilation and moroseness are present even in the demigods who are very highly situated in the upper planetary system. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable and unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma-bhuta, or self-realized, above the highness of the material world. So here is the knowledge that one should be tolerant of happiness and one should be tolerant of distress. Now we have that knowledge. Does that mean that no one is not going to be exhilarated or morose anymore? No, it doesn't mean that. So what is required? Say if we have the knowledge, what is required to be able to put the knowledge into place? It is purity. Purity born of devotion. We should know through knowledge, know what is correct and what is incorrect. But then we have to become purified. And as long as we're not purified, despite our knowing what is correct and incorrect, we will still have the ups and downs. So what are we supposed to do about that? We should tolerate them. We have no choice, practically speaking. We should tolerate them and become more and more determined to become purified. And how to become purified? The whole process of Krishna consciousness teaches us that. Especially the chanting of the holy names. So in the last chapter, in the illusion, it was dispelled by the Lord's presence. So the illusions of happiness and distress being ours to suffer and enjoy also will be dispelled by the Lord's presence. So therefore we should always keep in the Lord's presence by chanting his holy names. This is, practically speaking, we can say the conclusion. And we can't do that as long as we're not purified of the lower modes of material nature. So what should we do? We're supposed to do it. We can't do it. We try and acknowledge our position and ask Krishna to help us become more humble, more needy of Krishna's mercy, and then as he so desires, he shall help us advance. So this is the Brahma-bhuta platform, the Sochiti Nakanchiti. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be on the transcendental stage above the reactions of the three modes of material nature. So until one is on that the Brahma-Bhuta platform, the Soshiti, Nakankshiti, Sarasameshu, Bhuteshu, Madbhaktim, Labhate, Param, then one is aspiring to be a devotee. One is not quite a devotee yet. But then, by Krishna's grace, if one attains that platform, then one can be said to be a Vaishnava. So Bali continued, "You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you." What does that mean? Janmashtami. What does it mean? Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you.
Well, then they have. My understanding is that there's a sense of compassion because of the ignorance.
Yes. They feel sorry for you because ignorance means suffering. You think you're the doer, and therefore you're going to suffer because of that later, and we feel sorry for that. And the saintly persons reciprocate with knowledge. Don't you?
It shows the ignorance, and therefore the sadhus are free from the stress connected to that. So therefore, they feel sorry for everybody who's not in that life.
And they don't just feel sorry for them and, "Oh, you poor people, we're so great." No, they're compassionate, they're humble. It's only with big false egos that humility makes one very humble, or rather knowledge. Go ahead. You want to talk?
Also, maybe they feel sorry because they see Supreme Personality of Godhead always being close to the demigods. But the demigods, they worship him occasionally only, and they worship him for some material benefit, to win the battlefield, gain some wealth back, something like that. They just worship him for devotion.
But that's not what's being spoken of here. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Karta hum. Yes.
Instead of they would surrender.
Because of your ignorance. Your ignorance is that you're thinking that you are the one doing everything. This is the point that's going on here. And because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you, thinking that you are the doer, that you're the one doing everything. That means that you'll be elated when you succeed and morose when you fail. So one will follow the other. One must follow the other. On the other hand, one who knows that it is Krishna who is doing everything, ultimately, and the time factor in one's karma, and then one can do one's duty and be detached from the results and avoid so much suffering. And to be like that, one has to be free from the lower modes and false ego. And that's what it means to be a saintly person. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, though your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them. Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus rebuking Indra, king of heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, drew back to his ear the arrows known as Narachas, and attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he again chastised Indra with strong words. Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful. Since Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become angry, just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, released his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with the desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his aeroplane like a mountain with its wings cut off. Purport. In many descriptions of Vedic literatures, it is found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground, where they stay as very large dead bodies. What do you think about that, Janmashtami? Prabhu?
That's beyond my experience.
Yes. So, do you know that when Prabhupada went on, when he was in New York in 1976, and he went on a bus, not a public bus, but one of the Radha Damodar buses to Gita Nagari in 1976, perhaps in August, there were many mountains there, and he said, pointed to one and said, "This one used to fly," or something like that, something like that. Did you know that?
I had heard that before.
Yes. Did you know that?
That mountains can fly?
No, that Prabhupada said, "This one," but the Himalayan mountains, they don't fly. They're too big. Of immovable things on the Himalayas. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. The great powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcibly struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious. So you win one battle, then you lose a battle. And you win a battle and you lose. And you gain and you lose. This is life. And if we think that we're the ones doing everything, we suffer so much in life. Rather, if we actually keep in servant mentality, then we can accept whatever results come as our masters, not try to enjoy the results. Thereafter, Matali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot. Appreciating Matali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Matali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. This is Kshatriya spirit. You appreciate and then you try to kill because it's a war. Although the pain was extremely severe, Matali tolerated it with great patience. Indra, however, became extremely angry at Jambasura. He struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. When Narada Rishi informed Jambasura's friends and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, the three demons named Namuchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battlefield in great haste. This is one of the great things that Narada Muni does constantly. He churns the leelas. If it's not going fast enough or someone's been excluded, so he's telling them, he tells these three demons, "You know that Indra just killed your friend Jambasura?" And how do they react? They immediately come there, and what's going to happen to them? They get killed. They had missed out before. But then everyone gets brought back to life anyway. So, rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart, these demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rain wash a great mountain. And quickly handling the situation on the battlefield, the demon Bala put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulation by simultaneously piercing them all with an equal number of arrows. Paka, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Matali, by fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. This indeed was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield. Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. Other demons covered Indra along with his chariot and chariot driver with incessant shower of arrows. They wanted to kill Indra, just as a cloud covers the sun in the rainy season. The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies, so they lost, they were losing, then they gained the nectar, then the demons attacked and they were losing, then Hari saved the day, the Lord saved the day, and they were winning again, and now they're trying to kill Indra and they're losing again. The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. Having no captain or leader, they began lamenting like traitors in a wrecked vessel in the midst of the ocean. Purport. From this statement, it appears that in the upper planetary system, there's shipping and the traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary system in the creation of the Lord is certainly not vacant or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There is no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living beings. Thereafter, Indra released himself from the cage of the network of arrows, appearing with his chariot, flag, horses, and chariot driver, and thus pleasing the sky, the earth in all directions. He shone effulgently like the sun at the end of night. Indra was bright and beautiful in the vision of everyone. When Indra, who is known as Vajradhara, the carrier of the thunderbolt, saw his own soldiers so oppressed by the enemies on the battlefield, he became very angry, and thus he took up his thunderbolt to kill the enemies. Or King Prickett, King Indra used his thunderbolt to cut off the heads of both Bala and Paka in the presence of all their relatives and followers. In this way, he created a very fearful atmosphere on the battlefield. O king, when Namuchi, another demon, saw the killing of both Bala and Paka, he was full of grief and lamentation. Thus he angrily made a great attempt to kill Indra. Being angry and roaring like a lion, the demon Namuchi took up a steel spear which was bound with bells and decorated with ornaments of gold. He loudly cried, "Now you are killed!" Thus coming before Indra to kill him, Namuchi released his weapon. O king, when Indra, king of heaven, saw this very powerful spear falling towards the ground like a blazing meteor, he immediately cut it to pieces with his arrows. Then, being very angry, he struck Namuchi's shoulder with his thunderbolt to cut off Namuchi's head. Although King Indra hurled his thunderbolt at Namuchi with great force, it could not even pierce his skin. It was very wonderful that the famed thunderbolt that had pierced the body of Vritrasura could not even slightly injure the skin of Namuchi's neck. When Indra saw the thunderbolt return from the enemy, he was very much afraid. He began to wonder whether this had happened because of some miraculous superior power. Indra thought, formerly, when many mountains flying in the sky with wings would fall to the ground and kill people, I cut their wings with the same thunderbolt. Vritrasura was the essence of the austerities undergone by Twasta, and yet this thunderbolt killed him. Indeed, not only he, but many other stalwart heroes, whose very skin could not be injured even by all kinds of weapons, were killed by the same thunderbolt. But now, although the same thunderbolt has been released against a less important demon, it has been ineffectual. Therefore, although it is as good as a Brahmastra, it has now become useless like an ordinary rod. I shall therefore hold it no longer. Sukadeva Goswami continued. While the morose Indra was lamenting in this way, an animus, unembodied voice said from the sky, "The demon Namuchi is not to be annihilated by anything dry or moist." The voice also said, "O Indra, because I have given this demon the benediction that he will never be killed by any weapon that is dry or moist, you have to think of another way to kill him. Who is this voice? Do any of the acharyas say? Ominous. Daivam. After hearing this, so here's again, Krishna comes to the rescue of his devotees. Indra. Again he comes to his rescue. Because we may think, what happens? I'm always going to, if I become a devotee who's taking shelter of Krishna, I'm always going to be asking for his help. Isn't he going to get tired? Just like if someone comes to me continuously and says, can you help me with this? 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 And can you help me with this? And can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? Then eventually we tell him to... Why don't you take a walk around Govardhan Hill or something? But Krishna's not like that. Krishna's not like that. Again, Krishna comes to help. He saves the day for Indra and he gives him an interesting piece of information that although your thunderbolt cannot kill him, it is because I've given him a benediction that he cannot be killed by anything dry or moist. So in this information, there is a puzzle. Everything is either dry or wet. So how am I going to kill him? And he's trying to kill me. Thus Indra, king of heaven, severed Namuchi's head with a weapon of foam, which was neither dry nor moist. So he was inspired to do this. Did the acharyas comment on that verse? Talk about that. Where did he get that understanding from? How wonderful. Then all the sages satisfied Indra, the exalted personality, by showering flowers and garlands upon him, almost covering him. So who became glorious, glorified? They showering flowers on him. They garlanded him. And he was covered with flowers and garlands. And who actually was the one who gave him the knowledge and, of course, the ability to do this? Yes, it was Krishna. Yeah. So, but who got the flowers coming from heaven? It was Indra. So what's the tendency for the person who gets the flowers to immediately forget, wait a second, I was about to completely get depressed and give up the fight, but the unembodied Daivam voice came, who was the Lord, the all-powerful, omnipotent Lord. He told me what to do. So notice that what Bali Maharaj said about Indra, you're taking the credit and you're in ignorance. And again, Indra and the demigods, what to speak of us tiny insignificant souls, fall into the same trap of Maya as we aspire to be devotees. We do something by Krishna's grace and then we think, yes, I have done something wonderful. Where are the flowers? Where are the garlands? This is appropriate. And then Krishna has to arrange us again to fall into difficulty, which automatically will happen because we all have our karma or Krishna's mercy. We can see it in different ways. And then we call out to Krishna if we are fortunate for help. And then he helps us, and then we get proud again, and then up and down, until eventually, and it will happen, that we have enough of trying to build our false egos and try to find our happiness on that level, and we unceasingly will hold on to Krishna and refuse to accept any credit internally, thus feed our vicious false egos. Quite mysterious chapters. Vishva Vasu and Paravasu, the two chief of the Gandharvas, sang in great happiness. The kettle drums of the demigods sounded, and the apsaras danced in jubilation. Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other demigods began killing the demons who opposed them, just as lions kill deer in a forest with no opposition practically. What is a deer's weapon? How can it fight with a lion? It has no. All it has is those big eyes. That's all it can do is... O king, when Lord Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation, so how quickly everything just turns. We can say a few minutes ago the demons were powerful, or before that the demigods, and before that the demons, and before that the demigods, and before that the demons, and it goes this way and this way and this way and this way. It's a battle. This is life. It's like that. And suddenly it looks like the demons were getting completely annihilated. And Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation of the demons, and he sent a message with Narada, who went before the demigods to make them stop fighting, because ultimately the demigods are subservient. They accept. They have that much in them that they listen to the higher authorities. And the demons will not listen to higher authorities, that because who is the highest authority? It's me. So the great sage Narada said, all of you demigods are protected by the arms of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by his grace you have gotten the nectar. By the grace of the goddess of fortune, you are glorious in every way. Therefore, please stop this fighting. In other words, it's not you who are doing everything. It's not just by your power, it's Krishna's power working through you in these ways. And we don't want you to fight. This is the higher authority is saying, don't do this, stop now. Those, Brahma and Narada, representing the Supreme Lord. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, accepting the words of Narada, the demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Being praised by their followers, they return to their heavenly planets. Followers always praise. Following the order of Narada Muni, whatever demons remained on the battlefield, so it's the followers' duty to praise, and it's the leader's duty not to accept the praise, at least internally, and pass it on to the Supreme Lord. Whatever demons remained on the battlefield took Bali Maharaj, who was in a precarious condition, to the hill known as Astagiri. There on that hill, Sukracharya brought to life all the dead demoniac soldiers who had not lost their heads, trunks, and limbs. He achieved this by his own mantra known as Sanjivani, which means it brings back to life. Bali Maharaj was very experienced in universal affairs. When he regained his senses and memory by the grace of Sukracharya, because Sukracharya was fighting with Brihaspati, so he was on the side of the Asuras here. He remembered what had happened. Bali Maharaj remembered what had happened by the grace of Sukracharya. He could understand everything that had happened. Therefore, although he had been defeated, he did not lament. Purport. It is significant that Bali Maharaj is here said to be very experienced. Although defeated, he was not at all sorry, for he knew that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since he was a devotee, he accepted his defeat without lamentation. As stated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhagavad Gita 2:47, Karma neva dikaraste mapaleshu kadachana. Everyone in Krishna consciousness should execute his duty without regard for victory or defeat. One must execute his duty as ordered by Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. Anukalyena Krishna Shilam Bhakti Uttama. In first class devotional service, one always abides by the orders and will of Krishna, and is detached and not thinking oneself the doer, and is humble and dependent on Krishna. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. Now there's going to be a break in, not in the class at this moment, but in the next two chapters and then the saga is going to continue. Because the topic at the beginning of this canto was the other Manus, other than Swayambhuva Manu. And then Bali Maharaj is going to conquer heaven. So Indra's won now, and then Bali Maharaj again will have his turn. Although he's not qualified like Indra, he gains some qualification by the mercy of Sukracharya. And due to Indra's loss of qualification due to his offending Brihaspati. Okay, now we just finished all the verses we're supposed to, chapters we're supposed to do for both classes. We did that just now. So we'll just, instead of having a break now, what we'll do is ask if there's any questions or comments, and then we'll end. Is that nice to me?
One thing that occurs to me with these pastimes is that within ISKCON devotees are oftentimes fighting, and it seems that...
mean amongst other ISKCON, amongst ourselves.
Yeah, amongst themselves. And it seems that the cause of it is the, you know, the demons within, you know, the kind of the material...
Did you find the reference for that, by the way?
I seem to recall, I haven't looked yet, because you told me to wait. But
yes.
I think it's in the Jagaya Mandaya past, towards the end, you know, when Lord Nityananda...
Okay, right after. As soon as the next question comes around, then you can look. So this would be interesting to find that.
But it strikes me that, you know, having been in this country for 30 years, you know, that... when these things come out, you know, the conflicts that oftentimes, you know, the narratives of the devotee or the maniac qualities that still remain, that haven't been purified, the causative factors in these conflicts or fights. So what I'm wondering, is it appropriate for when these things happen, you know, for devotees to... it seems like a stupid question, but...
Is it a stupid question to you?
No.
Because if it's to you, I was going to suggest you don't answer it. Ask it.
But,
as long as it's not to you.
It would seem appropriate to just ask Krishna for help under those circumstances. You know, one might be under a lot of attack, you know, and it may not be that the attack is so Krishna conscious that it's coming from... material consciousness of other devotees. Maybe it's for our purification. I'm just wondering...
What kind of help would one ask Krishna for?
Well, I would say that the best kind of help is...
Because I saw that when a few years ago I went to the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. It's wild, actually. First of all, the place is so, it's powerful. It's like this energy like pours from it, but it didn't feel to me exactly like bhakti energy, but it's like a jnana type of energy or something. Anyway, I can't say what it is. But then right above that is the mosque on the hill. I can't remember what it's called. There's a name of it where Muhammad is said to have ascended. And then right next to that, on the lower part again, near the Wailing Wall where all the Jewish people come and worship, there's a temple, an old temple that's in there. And I went in there with one of the local devotees, and he said, and there's this huge sign up there in Hebrew. So he said, you know what that said? And I said, no. And he says, oh God, destroy all our enemies, anyone who is against Israel, something like that, destroy them because you... So do you mean like that, in that mood?
Well, I would think it would be similar to, you know, Bali Maharaj's chastising Indra, you know, that the sages feel sorry for you because of your ignorance. So I would think that a more appropriate prayer might be, please, my dear Lord, help these devotees become free from their anarthas and become enlightened and deal in a Vaishnava-like way.
Okay. And all I would just give one little suggestion
that I also
prove that. Not I also. You only. Please, O Lord, please help me get free from my anarthas and deal in this in a Vaishnava way.
Right.
And take care of oneself.
Okay, so in other words, better to pray for myself in those circumstances than to pray for someone else.
Well, better.
Or maybe both.
Better yourself. Because the sages are feeling compassionate because of the ignorance of the people thinking they are the doers, and everyone always thinks that they are right. So when we consider right or wrong, why is it that everyone says the other one is wrong and they are right? Because we only see a small part of reality. Right? We only see a small part of reality. And based on this little perspective that we have on what is reality, we're correct and the other person is wrong. But amazingly enough, if the perspective from the other person's point of view is that they are right, now who's right? Viewpoint means a view from a point. So from this point it looks like this, and from this point it looks like that. So if you put the two points together, it looks like something else. Or if you put all the points together in existence, in other words, the person who sees everything, that's Krishna's point of view. But no one but Krishna actually has their finger on reality. Only Krishna knows what is real. So how are we so sure that they are wrong and we are right? Because from their point of view, they're equally as sure very often that they are right and you are wrong. So let me just finish my little speech here. So instead of that, being so sure that they are wrong, we can pray that Krishna, that I don't know what's your viewpoint, Krishna, because you haven't let me know. But I'm trying my best using whatever intelligence and knowledge you've given me. But I'm willing to be corrected if you so desire. But this is the best I can do, and I'm making this offering to you in this way because I think this is serving your desire. But please, if it is not your desire, please make the adjustments, and I'm willing, because I'm more attached to pleasing you than being sure that I'm correct. Let me act, and then add that second part. Then let me act in a way, like Bali Maharaj is saying, not thinking that I'm the doer, but thinking that I'm your servant, and then I'll do my duty and do it, and whatever happens is your will, I'll accept that. That's how I would take it. And you do your duty. You do it in a dutiful way because you think this is according to your ability and what intelligence Krishna has given you, that this is pleasing to Krishna. But you want to do it in such a way that it is pleasing to Krishna. And never believe the words of your followers because they're always going to give you garlands and throw flowers at you because that's their duty.
I think that also part of the consciousness in these circumstances, when one should try to put himself in the position of the other person, to try and understand why they're in this space, you know,
right? Yeah.
And that would probably be quite helpful, you know, in just dealing with it, you know, because that can also be, they're also either struggling in the material world, trying to become Krishna conscious, which hopefully that's their position. And so if one has a compassionate mood, then that might be very helpful in coming to resolution. In other words, the tendency will be to see this person as my enemy.
But compassion also means it flows from a superior to an inferior. But it can't, I mean, the English word doesn't differentiate, but there's different Sanskrit words that...
Say that. I didn't hear the last sentence.
In English, it doesn't necessarily mean that, but there are different Sanskrit words that we would translate as compassion, and some of them mean like that, flowing from a superior to an inferior. So it can be condescending when we think like that. And we have to watch out for that because people don't like it when we act in a kind of, oh yes, I feel sorry for you because because of the limited way that you're seeing things, but don't worry, I'll help you. And I'll see things from your point of view too. People don't, if they catch a scent of a feeling of superiority, you won't have your way. But on the other hand, if they feel the inherent humility of it, then they won't take it as much as an attack, and the defenses will go down. Just some ideas. Like what?
Also, one last point on this. You know, that there are descriptions, you know, that we get from Shastra about what proper behavior and proper consciousness is. And
so therefore we should really make sure that we act in proper behavior and proper consciousness.
Right. And then also that can be parameters from which we can evaluate the behavior of others.
As long as we've sufficiently evaluated our own behavior. I mean, because you're talking about the dealings of devotees, amongst the devotees. But mostly we should, you know that business software called Mayab? Anyone ever use Mayab? Anyone? Yes? No?
Do you use it with your slideshows?
No, that's PowerPoint. Oh no, that's ProShow Gold, that one. But there's a business software called Mayab. MYOB. And you know what that means? It's accounting software. It means mind your own business. MYOB. We used to say that when we were kids. Mind your own business. MYOB. And then we'd put an E at the end. Everyone. So everyone should basically mind their own business, their own service. And unless it's our specific service to correct another, or if we think that some other isn't acting properly, if we're fighting with them, when they're not acting properly, then it's dutifully we can. If you try to correct a person that you're fighting with, is that ever successful?
Not too often.
Right, but if you actually perceive someone's not acting properly, then you express that, you do your duty and express that to a superior, one who's superior to both who's involved. Because everyone is so expert at seeing the faults of everyone else, but not their own. Did you want to?
I have a somewhat technical question.
Yes.
We see there is Surya and Vayu fighting. No, Indra also. We also know that there are deities.
Yeah.
Indra, the deity of hands or arms. Surya of the eyes and seeing, Vayu of breath and everything. Why didn't they make the demons just blind and, you know, stunned and everything? Are the demons' hands, eyes, and breath dependent on these seven deities?
It seems so. But either they can't or they won't.
So beings, they are so noble, they are fighting, but they won't interfere with what's...
If they won't, if it's inappropriate, and if that's the case, yes, then it means there's nobility there, which one would expect. Maybe, you know, that maybe, I don't know, but that's why... And the demons have their point, too, their strengths, like that they have their mystic opulences. And interested, we have the mystic powers. Notice that he said that? We are Yogeshwaras. So the implication was, we don't use it, because this isn't appropriate here. So there's, in battle, when there was nobility amongst Kshatriyas, it was fought in a certain, according to certain codes. So maybe, as we say, maybe that's won't. But I don't really know. I can't answer authoritatively. Yes.
When the demigods were almost defeated by the magic of Bali Maharaj, he called upon the Lord and he immediately appeared with 8 hands, so he was ready. That was what struck me. And also before, he always appears ready. He already knows what's happening. It's not just like when he will appear, then he will see what's happening and then he will act. But because he's all-knowing.
He's all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-present.
Yes.
So that's the kind of person we should take shelter of.
And is this a vector?
Rabbits. Human beings. And rats. And swans. Lizards. Wonderful, yes.
Even the animals with the foreign bodies.
So is this possible? Or is this just some story? Yes.
Is there some commentary which explains why Dhanavatar was not able to keep the nectar on his finger?
Well, I didn't hear any myself. But of course we can say it's pastime. So the pastime could go on. And also he was an Anksa of an Anksa. He was empowered for Ayurveda, not for that particular purpose, perhaps. But did you see anything when you looked in there?
Yes, Srila Prabhupada quotes a verse, and in that verse it actually says that although he could, he just released. Although he could fight with them, he just let it go.
Which implies...
Because he wanted them to see the power of the nectar.
That was with Rahu, yes?
Was it with Rahu or the Mandushi?
Because it was the time of ignorance. There's always, the modes are in competition always, they're always, sometimes one is prominent, sometimes another is prominent, and sometimes another is prominent. So when it's the time for goodness to be prominent according to the modes, then the devas become powerful. And when it's the time of ignorance to be prominent, then the asuras become powerful. So then the question is, why does Krishna allow them to happen like that? So one can ask the same question, and why does Kali Yuga have to happen? Because in Kali Yuga, because of ignorance, the demons become powerful. And that it just has to happen like that. It's just the nature of the changing thing. And Kali Yuga has to happen because there's a general tendency to go down. And sins are accumulated, and reactions are accumulated, and then Kali Yuga happens. So there are inconsistencies when that happens, and Krishna takes care of them. And one of those is described in the first canto, like when Kali Yuga is coming, and Maharaj Prickett is the king. So he can't allow Kali Yuga's effects to happen because he's the king and he's so powerful. But Kali Yuga has to come, and he can't allow it. So how does Krishna reconcile this? He removes Maharaj Prickett. So we would think it would have been so much better if he removed Kali Yuga. But it can't. It has to happen. Kali has to come. So that has its negative side and its positive side. The negative side is all the suffering. And the positive side is there's so many more opportunities to take shelter of Krishna and not be complacent and to take shelter of Krishna's holy names. Okay, we'll end now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.